Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why are there no governmental commissions working on behalf of boys and men? We're diving in. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-host, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being here. Thanks for supporting our sponsors.
There are no governmental commissions working on behalf of boys and men in the United States. Not at the federal level and not at the state level. 50 states, not one. Even though boys lag behind girls in academic achievement, and boys and men experience suicide, murder, drug and alcohol addiction, homelessness, incarceration, and early death at disproportionately high rates. And even though there are multiple commissions dedicated to addressing and advancing the needs of girls and women. Now, you know, you can hear, I'm a woman. I support commissions and research helping women. And I believe, as does Janet, and as do our listeners, that boys and men need and deserve attention and care as well. Today's guest, Blair Daly, is working to change the status quo. He is the founder of Washington Initiative for Boys and Men, which advocates for improved outcomes for boys, men, and communities. Welcome, Blair.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Tell us about Washington Initiative for Boys and Men. What do you do and why do you do it?
What I do with Washington Initiative for Boys and Men is a combination of advocacy journalism and grassroots political organizing and advocacy. So on the advocacy journalism site, I have a website, wibm.us, where on about a weekly basis, I post a new article or video. And it's I basically think of myself as a media outlet that's locally focused just on the on Washington State. And I want to tell stories both that are positive about boys and men. For example, ways in which they contribute to their families and communities and ways in which we rely on boys and men. As well as I write some of those sadder stories that are pointing out ways in which perhaps we're neglecting the needs and well-being of our male population. So that's the advocacy journalism. And then on the grassroots political organizing side, for about 3 years, I've been building up a network of people here in my state who share my passion for ensuring that our boys and men are thriving as much as they can be and who are willing to advocate in the political arena. So I've seen that the male population, I think, could be described as an under-advocated for population group. There's very little organized political advocacy. And I found that I was in a position to try to make a difference there. So our largest project on the political advocacy front is trying to get a state commission on boys and men.
How did you get into this work? And, you know, our longtime listeners will know that Janet and I, we use video when we are talking with our guests. You can't see Blair. You know, Blair, you are a white guy. You're younger than me and Janet. What brought you to this work?
I started the advocacy journalism piece of what I do during a period of unemployment. So I was about 2 weeks into being unemployed, being unexpectedly, I wouldn't say laid off, but kind of my job wasn't renewed unexpectedly. And so I was about 2 weeks into that period and I was on a run and I realized I need to start a website where I just catalog the different local advocacy campaigns that I'm up to. Because by this point, I was exposed to boys and men's issues, and I had realized that maybe I can make a difference here. So I was doing little miniature advocacy campaigns. For example, I saw that one of our major service providers for homeless individuals in Seattle had a fact sheet on causes of homelessness. And on that fact sheet, they listed one of the, I think, 10 causes that they listed was dad was violent with mom, something like that, like dad abused mom. And because I had experienced domestic violence myself as a man from my ex-spouse, I was at that point aware that domestic violence is not merely a matter of men mistreating women. So I contacted them to to ask, you know, why is that the case? Turned out there's some kind of deeper rooted reasons why that they had only listed dad mistreats mom as a cause of homelessness, but they were very open-minded to my suggestion to change that to just parents were abusive or parents were violent.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so over a period of weeks, you know, I was able to make that change. That's just one example of the little mini campaigns. So started the website to document that. The personal experiences that I've had that bring me to a place of greater empathy and care for boys and men include domestic violence, like I just mentioned, from my ex-spouse, but also fatherlessness, with my parents having divorced when I was 14. So I was an adolescent boy without a dad regularly in my life. And then also when I was about 17, I experienced depression and then suicidal ideations for the first time. And then later came to learn about how completed suicide is a predominantly male behavior. Mm-hmm. So fatherlessness, suicidal ideation, domestic violence. And then another personal experience I'd add is reflecting back to my experience in college, I realized how badly I wanted a rite of passage and wanted some way to enter the community of men in a meaningful way. That links to basically our dormitory for freshmen had an initiation process. And I had heard rumors that they were going to go soft on us that year. Like maybe they were kind of backing down on how rigorous it would be.
Sure.
And I went to the leaders and asked them to not back down and to give us the full experience. And thinking back on that, I realized, okay, first of all, rite of passage is not a term that I was thinking of back then, but I realized that's kind of how I was viewing it.
Right.
And I wanted to earn it. And so as a result of that, they kind of bestowed on me an honorable brother name that kind of stuck with me. And so these are the personal experiences I've had that brought me to this place.
I got to ask, what's the name?
Oh, it's a secret. I can't tell you.
Ah, okay.
I got to ask I'm going to put in air quotes, rite of passage was. And I mean, I'm definitely aware of the lack of rites, of real, deep, reverent rites of passages for boys. So what did that look like in a freshman college dormitory?
I bet he's going to tell us it's a secret too, Janet.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, I can't say. I mean, they were physical, they were mental, there were different kinds of ways of, as a team, as a band of brothers working together to overcome obstacles and challenges.
In a positive way. I mean, I'm thinking of hazing, you know, I'm going to that place. It wasn't like that.
Hazing. No, it wasn't
okay.
Like that.
Okay. All right. That sets my mind a little straighter, even though we'll never
know. But you know
what?
Let's address that, because we both thought that. We both were kind of scared that was going to be the answer. And that speaks to some of our cultural stereotypes that we have about boys and men. If you say a bonding thing, an orientation thing, rite of passage for male freshmen, that's kind of what many of us are quick to assume. And that, to me, speaks a little bit to some of these expectations and ideas that are buried deep within most of us. And I mean, sure, there's reasons for that. Like, we have all heard and read the stories about hazing gone wrong at fraternities and people dead on lawns of alcohol poisoning and things like that. We've heard that. And yet when we project that onto a whole group of people, that's not fair, just, or accurate.
And I don't have experiences I'll say it this way. The college that I went to was a Christian college, and I've never been much into alcohol. So there wasn't that factor that my understanding is can elevate risks of all kinds of harm happening when there's alcohol involved.
Yeah, that's just a good, true statement. You know, I really appreciate you sharing some of your personal experiences too, because at a glance, you are the kind of person that a lot of people assume you got it all together, right? You're a young, white, male, come on. And yet your reality, as for so many, does include a lot of hard things. Janet, we talked about adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. Adverse experiences certainly happen to adults too. So this is our reality. And yet many people assume that that's not the case, which I suspect feeds into this lack of attention for boys and men. What do you think?
I was told during one meeting with a particular legislator that, hey, Blair, just looking at you, you don't elicit a lot of sympathy, basically. I have a hard time viewing you as the most effective spokesperson for the cause of boys and men because you do seem like someone who has a lot of advantages. And I understand where he's coming from. And I also, it's very important to me to face the facts, face reality as it is in the political arena that I'm choosing to engage in. So what that means is, when coming to meetings and trying to pitch the Commission on Boys and Men legislation to different groups to gain their political support, whenever possible, I try to have someone who's not, frankly, a straight white male accompany me. And I try to repeatedly demonstrate the diverse support that we have. And that has manifested in a lot of ways, which I'm very grateful for, and which is reflective of the consistent work that I put in and day out for years on end. Examples of how we demonstrate diverse support are the legislators so far who have signed on as sponsors of the bill. And if you look at the faces and names of the 14 legislators in the Senate and the House, I'm talking about Washington state level legislature, you'll see a lot of diversity there, racial and ethnic, gender. Also, if you look at the districts that
Age.
they represent, age, we have some of the most senior and some of the youngest legislators in Olympia. The districts that they represent are rural, suburban, and urban. So a lot of diversity there. Also, among my core group of advocates who cooperate with me and who are so helpful in working with me, there's lots of women. There's lots of people of color. There's people from around the state. I don't want this to just be a Western Washington or Eastern Washington focused thing because there are pretty big political differences and kind of cultural differences between the two sides of the state. The fact that I've lived
Janet's in
before.
Oregon and she's nodding her head so vigorously, listener. She gets that kind of divide even within a state.
Yeah, and I've lived in both Western Washington and Eastern Washington because where I went to college, Whitworth University is in Spokane. So we try to demonstrate that support. And another example is we just updated our one pager that makes the case for this Commission on Boys and Men legislation by adding faces. We didn't have any photos on it. We just had statistics and words. And as much as we know that you need to connect emotionally, not just logically with people when making appeals to them for political support, we just hadn't designed the one pager at that point with any images on it, and we realized that needed a lot of different faces on that one pager too.
And I know, and listeners know too, that Jen will link to the one pager in the show notes. But I really encourage you to go and look at it because this not only are the faces there, but also statistics of, and this is Washington males, but Blair, I'm sure we can assume this is not just Washington. This is countrywide,
Yeah, any of the
worldwide.
issues we highlight.
Males are dying by suicide, overdoses, incarceration, homelessness, uninsured, which I thought was, I hadn't seen that statistic before. 65% of uninsured non-elderly adults are male, failing in school, and that males are underrepresented in the fields of mental health counseling, elementary education, and social work. And these numbers, listeners, are below 25%. For all of those areas where we need men. We need our boys and men to have boys and men to talk to.
And I focus on a Washington state level, as you know, and that's been really empowering for me. Early when I learned about boys and men's issues and wanted to be involved, I was involved in some national level meetings and discussions about things they're trying to accomplish in BC. And that was really helpful from the standpoint of, for example, learning what vocabulary to use and not use when talking about these issues, learning what, yeah, just what words land and what words don't land as well, but also networking and getting to know some of the men and women who've been advocating for boys and men for decades, far longer than I have. I basically came into this space in 2019 or so. So I'm only 4 or 5 years into it. But over time, it felt like I wasn't able to accomplish much being here in Washington State and trying to work on something, to accomplish at the White House or with Congress. So I pulled back from that national stuff and decided I'm going to focus locally. And I think Washington State would be a good purview for me because, like I said, I've lived in both Western and Eastern Washington. It's a population of 8 million. Half of those 8 million are males. So that's about 4 million people. Within 4 or 5 hours, I can drive to every corner of the state. So let me focus on Washington State. And that has turned out to be a decision I'm really pleased with. And so it's just this discrete geography, this discrete population. And so what that means is there's a lot going on outside of Washington State that I don't pay as much attention to as I could, but the trade-off is that I'm able to be effective in my geographic boundaries.
We are only talking about Washington State at this point, but it definitely translates to other states. These issues are national and international. Stay tuned for more after these messages from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only US-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast, and it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer, and additional terms and conditions may apply. We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet. But a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten easy melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve and I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin now.
Yeah, no, and they taste good and they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys.
It's so hard to make a difference at the national level, but it's so much easier to not only make a real difference, but to feel like you are, and just use your relationships, your networks with people that you actually run into physically, versus if you're trying to cooperate on national issues, it's just Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting, and it's hard to be as effective.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a lesson that slowly is sinking in for a lot of us. Yes, we have big systemic issues globally and as a country, all countries do. And yet, increasingly, I feel like over the last few years, people are realizing that a lot of powerful change can happen at the local levels. There's been increased attention to things, you know, like municipal elections, school board elections. So I look at what you're doing as a very powerful piece of that. Tell us a little bit about this bill that you have been working on gaining support for in Washington State to establish a commission on boys and men. And I'll spoil it a little bit. To date, it's not yet been passed, but it's got bipartisan support. Each year it seems to go a little bit further. And I mean, if I'm a betting person right now, I think I would bet on Washington State being the first to ultimately establish a commission on boys and men.
Thanks. Yeah, we very much hope to and intend to be. And frankly, we like the idea of trying to accomplish it in a blue state first rather than a red state. And there's political reasons for that pertaining to trying to keep boys and men's issues out of the culture wars and not being associated with the right or conservatives. So Washington would be a great place for this to happen. Yes, we're 3 years into this effort and no hearing so far. But like you said, each year we're gaining more sponsors and we're gaining more endorsements from nonprofit organizations. That's one of the things I do is reach out to them to see, hey, can I add your organization's name and logo to our website so that we can demonstrate more diverse support? Also, media coverage. That's been really encouraging. To date, we have about 30 media articles and pieces that have addressed the Commission on Boys and Men legislation in Washington. And it's all been either neutral or positive. I'm waiting for that first negative hit piece, some kind of critical piece to come out. But maybe we need to get a little bit farther along and actually demonstrate a greater likelihood of the bill passing before any kind of opposition might rise up to the extent of actually publishing something opposed to it. I think more so it's fairly easy behind the scenes for those who think there's something objectionable about this. It's behind the scenes with the relationships that they have on the inside. They can express that, hey, maybe don't give a hearing to this bill. You know, we don't need a commission on boys and men. This might draw negative attention to us in a way that we don't want. I mean, that's one of the things that we deal with. My understanding is politicians tend to respond to money, so donations, as well as votes. Are they going to gain votes or lose votes?
Absolutely.
And they're interested in their reputations among their peers. And if they're part of an advocacy community, they're interested in their reputations among their advocacy community. And because there's not a very robust, organized advocacy ecosystem around boys and men,
right,
the politicians don't have that much to gain, really, if anything, in terms of donations and
That's
votes.
That's a good point.
But some of them do have a little bit to lose potentially by associating with this in terms of reputation, possibly losing some donations from certain organizations that are opposed to this. So we try to put ourselves in the shoes of the politicians, and boy, are we impressed and grateful that 14 already, which happens to be an equal mix of Republicans and Democrats. I'll say that again, an equal mix of Republicans and Democrats. And happens to be 8 women and 6 men who are among the 14 legislators who've signed on. And so we have already seen many legislators take that risk, be bold, be brave, perhaps stick their necks out a little bit and risk a little bit of criticism. Like, hey, isn't this an advantaged group? Isn't this, maybe this effort is secretly motivated by a desire to roll back the clock, and perhaps this is, you know, actually a straight white male kind of thing, and they're just pretending to care about all males. Which we genuinely do, all boys, male youth, and men. We see that there are other commissions in the state that focus on different population groups, and there's some overlap. But without a commission focused on the male population, we think a lot is being missed. These cross-cutting issues that cut across race, that cut across class, they're challenges that boys and men broadly are facing.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about what Jen and I've talked about so many times of like, we can affect change at the local level, and then there's the bigger piece. It seems like when you're in one-on-one conversations with people, they're like, oh yeah, sure, boys and men. Yeah, okay. But the larger voice out there is, wait a minute, men are, you know, only men have been presidents, only, you know, the most legislators have been men in Washington, D.C. And so it's like this different two layers of this cake that we're trying to flip, I guess you could say, and help people get past that notion of, well, men have been historically advantaged. And I think we can pound these statistics at people. The personal stories absolutely make more of an impact. But how do you wrestle with these two sides?
You're exactly right that in one-on-one conversations, we make far more progress. And there's almost never someone who comes away from, if they give us 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, they hear a little bit of our pitch. Almost nobody comes away saying, no, they don't have anything here. This isn't real. So to some extent, accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish politically, getting this bill passed and getting a state commission on boys and men, is a matter of pursuing more and more meetings with legislators on like a one-on-one basis. Or usually, like I said, I bring in a couple of fellow advocates and it's 3 of us and 1 of them. That takes time and it takes persistence to get on their schedules. Some of the, I mean, many of these legislators are pretty busy, well, year round, including during the session. But when it's when the session is not active, they have full time jobs because our legislature, you know, it doesn't pay enough as a full time job to be doing this year round. There's a lot of legislators. There's 98 House representatives and 49 senators. And you go down the list, and so far we've probably had in person, one on one, like small group interactions with a third of them. So that's 2/3 that we haven't interacted with, but that third has already brought us to this point of what we've accomplished so far politically.
Yeah.
And there's changeover, you know, every 2 years there's a new election. So some people come in, some people go out. And that's why building a robust network of fellow advocates who are willing to cooperate with me and take some of that load of asking for the meetings and joining me in the meetings and producing content is so helpful and so encouraging and such a big part of my mission. So I'm constantly networking, having meetings with people, finding other organizations that have overlapping concern and trying to explain to them, look, with Washington Initiative for Boys and Men, I'm not trying to be a service provider. I'm not trying to hold classes. I'm specifically in the niche of advocacy journalism. So trying to get some stories out there that other media outlets wouldn't be interested in covering as much, and the political organizing. So I'm kind of putting myself forward as the lobbyist or the special interest group who does the relationship building with the legislators, who gets familiar with how Olympia works, with how bills are passed, and can help be a voice and a spokesperson for issues and causes that, for example, organizations that do have classes and provide services, for example, to fathers or to young men, like mentoring programs. I want to be a voice for them to lawmakers. And I am active not only at the state level, but the county and city level, any level of government where I find people willing to cooperate with me, or if I find an issue that frankly needs to be taken on because there's a little bit of discrimination going on or just neglect of boys and men as a population group,
yeah,
I'm happy to get involved.
You mentioned early on, as you started working in DC initially, and then brought your work home to Washington, kind of learning, you know, about the vocabulary, which words maybe resonate with people, which words maybe turn people off. And I think it would be helpful to talk about that. And the reason is, you know, our listeners, they get it. They understand what you're talking about. They know these issues are here. And I think there are a lot of people that want to bring these issues to more attention. And any advice you can share, I think will help us all and ultimately help our boys, our men, and our communities.
One of the things I learned is that there are certain issues that are easier to talk about and that are less triggering to people than others. So the Commission on Boys and Men bill proposes 5 focus areas for this proposed commission. But the focus areas that we find are easiest to connect with people across the spectrum politically are education and physical and mental health. Those are 2 areas that don't trigger as much defensiveness or curiosity as other issues. The other focus areas for the commission are fatherhood, families, and relationships, as well as jobs, careers, and financial well-being of our male population. And finally, the experiences of males in court systems. So when we start with education and physical and mental health, we find greater empathy, and that issue resonates with folks. Also, just for example, when I started this advocacy work, I chose to brand myself as Equality for Boys and Men. And you won't be surprised that using the word equality associated with boys and men confuses some people. So I made a rebranding decision about a year ago and changed to Washington Initiative for Boys and Men, which has been a very positive thing. It, you know, it then has the word Washington in it. So it makes it more clear that I am focused on Washington, but it also avoids talking about equality. Equity is another one where sometimes I use that. And I talk about a vision for true gender equity and gender equality. Oftentimes I'll just use both those terms, gender equity and gender equality, rather than one or the other.
Yeah.
Because I find that certain folks in Washington really want to only talk about equity, and other people are more interested in kind of the, I guess, what's become a bit old-fashioned notion of equality, like equality of opportunity, non-discrimination, equal treatment before the law. So I just choose to use both terms because I can comfortably speak about what I mean by both.
So I'm future pacing here. Imagining, you know, next year this bill passes in Washington and you have your commission And, you know, it's like the ribbon cutting. Here's the commission. And we've got adequate funding, because I'm sure that's another issue.
Probably be a separate issue. Is that correct, Blair? And the reason why I'm asking, I know so often, like, legislation will get passed, but without funding, nothing's actually going to happen with it. So is that two separate pieces, or how does that work in Washington State?
Yeah, I've been warned to look out for that possibility. The way that we wrote our bill proposes having two paid staff. So it does create two new FTE jobs. These would be state government employees, an executive director of the commission, and an additional staff person helping that executive director. All nine of the commissioners would be volunteers. And then there'd be four legislative advisors, so members of the legislature who would advise two Democrats, two Republicans. But it's been proposed, for example, some people offer the idea of, hey, if getting this bill passed is going to continue to be challenging, you could pursue getting the commission created without that the paid jobs. And then the bill would not have a fiscal note. Yeah. And it could maybe be written into something else instead of passed as its own standalone bill. We're aware of that possibility. We're trying to avoid it. And for now, we're sticking with the plan of following the example that other commissions that have been established in the state have taken.
So what will the commission actually do in day-to-day real life? Is it bringing in other agencies, working through them? What will it do ultimately?
I'm going to read from our one pager because I like the way we phrase it there.
Okay.
The commission will be tasked with assembling data and experts, connecting public, private, and nonprofit partners, consulting with state agencies and established commissions, and making recommendations for policies and programs to help improve the well-being of Washington's boys, male youth, and men.
This is a big thing that happened, you know, when there was increased attention decades ago about, hey, women are not achieving as much in school. Women are not doing as well in the workplace. Hey, what are these issues? So this is part of why commissions were established, right, Blair? To have, first of all, you need the dedicated research, statistics, and facts. So then you can advocate and design solutions. And that's been highly effective.
Yeah, it's making it somebody's job to be concerned with these different population groups that are demonstrated to have unique challenges, unique sets of issues. And you look at the data and statistics and you say, in this case, being male is statistically significantly indicative of a likelihood of problems X, Y, Z, A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
And advocating for the male population is a very interesting space to be in, because on the one hand, our target population, the population we view ourselves as advocating for and serving, is really large. It's half the population.
Right.
And on the other hand, the amount of advocacy that exists is so small that if you just get involved, you become a leader immediately. And you find that there's just this vast universe of work that can be done. Like, for example, on the advocacy journalism, there's so many stories that I am eager to tell. And I love the diversity of stories I can tell, because almost anything is in my wheelhouse if you're talking about all boys and men's issues.
Right.
I'm not just a fatherhood-focused organization. I'm not just a male youth organization. It's boys and men's issues across the board.
More on what a commission for boys and men could do after these messages from our sponsors. As Mother's Day is coming around, I find I'm missing my mom more and more. And there's always questions and stories I wish I had asked her when she was still here. I do remember that I gave her a book once upon a time with questions for her to write the answers to, and bless her heart, she didn't answer very many, so that was really a disappointment. But fast forward to now and technology, and now we have mylifeinabook.com. It takes all those questions and stories and it puts it in a format that is sent to your person, whoever you designate, on a regular basis, so that the prompts come, they're easily answered either written or voice to text, and they're captured by mylifeinabook.com. These family stories, this legacy that you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren. Mylifeinabook.com, create an unforgettable gift for your mom, your dad, your children, this Mother's Day. Use our coupon code ONBOYS for 10% off. Go to mylifeinabook.com and use ONBOYS for 10% off. Create that legacy. Carry on those stories.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering, and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series, Talk with Boys Like a Pro, about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions. And that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys, and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro, about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys, and get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us.
Part of what this Commission on Boys and Men would do is actually embed a little bit of advocacy focused on the male population in state government. I recognize that is an ask for sure. Some could say, well, you don't have the same kind of grassroots movement built up, for example, for civil rights that then led to an African American Affairs Commission, or that built up for women's advocacy that then led to the creation of commissions on women and girls. And that's true. We don't have nearly that same kind of size and mass of a grassroots movement. So you could say, you know, you're putting the cart before the horse by asking for a commission when you hardly have a grassroots movement. Now, in Washington State, at least, we are building a pretty significant grassroots movement. It's not tiny. And the amount of people that endorse what we're doing is really growing. And we're getting some big names and heavy hitters. But also, we view this commission as ideally a problem-solving entity, not an entity that's interested in engaging with the past, but looking at the present and saying, are there a set of problems that justify having someone focused on solving those problems through the gender lens and in a male-friendly way, and a group of people who can bring together experts and data and make recommendations? And we think there's a strong case for that.
I have long thought that moms of boys are such a powerful army waiting to be tapped and mobilized, because this is how so many of us who are female learn about these issues. I've written about it and I've talked about it here on the podcast. Until I had sons, I really didn't know how gender impacted males' lives. I was in my bubble, right? And this happens for so many of us. You mentioned education and physical and mental health are where people tend to get engaged. Sure, you send your son to school and immediately, almost immediately, you start to see things, or your son is dealing with mental health or physical issues. So given that that army exists, and that's a lot of our listeners, and you've got advocating experience, what would you tell listeners, moms of boys, who want to get involved at their local level? Or perhaps their state level.
One thing that can trigger some people to get involved is just noticing when boys and men's well-being is being neglected, or even noticing instances of prejudice, bias, discrimination. That can be a catalyst for some people to say, you know, this is wrong. And mm-hmm. What that takes prior to that is awareness raising, being aware of these issues, being aware that, for example, if you hear people talk about domestic violence as only men abusing women, and everyone in the room seems to agree that that's the case, you could be the one that speaks up and says, actually, you know, I know this guy, Blair. I've seen some statistics. Men can be abused too in relationships. And actually, this is not primarily a gender-based issue, but a human issue of behavioral matters. And then I have a full-time job working for a city government, and that's how I pay my bills. And then the Washington Initiative for Boys and Men is my passion, and I do it unpaid. But I spend a lot of time doing it, and that has allowed me to build up an organization per se. But a few people have contributed financially to what I do, which I'm grateful for, which pays for things like website fees and printing flyers. I guess I'm saying that because there aren't that many people who happen to be in life circumstances where they could spend as much time unpaid doing what I do as I can. And that's about to change even for me, probably, because I expect to be married and probably working on having a child by next year. So
congratulations.
Thanks. So I too will have less time to spend on it. And it's just not an area where there's a lot of money. So you can't expect to get into advocacy for boys and men and then find an executive director job that pays $100,000 a year.
Yeah. So you're telling us, Blair.
Yeah. As podcasting for 7 years on these topics. But I'm remembering our conversation with Gemma Gaudette in Idaho, in Boise, talking about just what you were saying, Jen, about how important it is for moms to be the advocates for their sons. And it's going to start in likely when they hit elementary school, and they're going to see the problems that are very apparent in early education for boys. I mean, who's getting disciplined? Who's getting expelled? Who's getting the calls home from teachers? It's likely the boys. And so for our listeners, and our listeners, longtime listeners know this, it's like seeing it, being aware of it, that it actually is possible that this is really happening. I think sometimes parents don't want to believe that their teacher is going to favor girls over boys. And yet it's true. And the more we can speak to it and I hate to use the word normalize, but normalize it, then moms can get super active. Not that dads aren't going to, but I think there is a place that's valuable for women to be stepping up, because what I'm hearing you say is it's a little more difficult for men to advocate for men, would you say?
Yeah, for a range of reasons. So it's very, very helpful when women speak up for boys and men. Yeah.
So let's say I'm a listener or a podcast host who is considering contacting, you know, my local legislator because I am concerned about boys and men. And there's not currently a commission in my state. Do you have any advice for, you know, how somebody would go about that? Or is it worth making that effort?
You could look for what bills different legislators have passed. Just by reading the local news, you might be coming across different bills. And because boys and men's issues are so broad, it's pretty easy to find something that connects. Shared parenting is a topic I know you all have recently covered.
Yeah.
Fentanyl, opioid, and marijuana use is another, you could say, boys and men's issue. There are different topics that seem to get hot among politicians and legislators, and they want to be the person with their name at the top of the bill that was working on solving this high-profile problem. And if you can connect with one and help them understand that we love this bill, you know, we've been working on boys and men's issues for a while, we want to support you. So you're praising them, you're offering their support, and then you're just exposing them to the male gender issue, which they may never have thought of before.
Sure.
Often government agencies are not tasked with highlighting disparities or inequities, or you could say gender gaps that affect the male population. So these politicians may be reading government reports and looking at statistics prepared for them, but those reports and statistics might not do a very good job of bringing out the reality of the male disparity. Mm-hmm. And so if you can be the one that does that, then you're adding to their information base. You could then see if they're interested enough and then pivot that to other issues you're interested in working on.
That's such great advice. Such great advice. And you're right. Nearly every issue does affect boys and men. So find a way to take somebody's interest, express a genuine interest in that as well, and then value add. I love that. And I think that's valuable information that we can all use in our personal lives too. Because as we talked about at the top of this episode, storytelling, bringing these stories to light is what really, it sounds cliche, but you need to touch hearts and minds. And that's how it happens, by sharing stories. And when you can touch on what somebody else is already interested in, add this angle, that's where powerful things can happen.
A fun part of my work that is a little bit tedious, but I actually enjoy it, is with Washington Initiative for Boys and Men. I view myself as, like I said, kind of a special interest or lobby focused on the male population. And so one of the duties I think someone should be doing, so I'll do it if no one else is looking at every bill that's introduced in the legislature through the lens of how might this be harming or helping our boys and men.
Yeah.
And you can get actually a pretty good idea of what's in the bill by just reading the topic, the title of the bill. And in Washington, our legislators are prolific. They introduce so many bills. So we're talking about a list of hundreds and hundreds, over 1,000 bills. But reading just the title of the bill isn't that burdensome. So what I do is, you know, each session I read through that long list, and then I make a separate spreadsheet where I copy and paste the bill number and a link to the bill and the title of the bill into a new spreadsheet. And at the end, like this past session, I had over 100 bills that I was interested in. But many of those bills won't get a hearing. And there is like legislative tracking software that you can use to help keep track of this, so you're not going every day and checking these different web pages, but you will be notified if any action is taken on a bill. And then it ended up at more like 20 bills or something among the 100 that had any action taken on them. And then you can start to see which bills are moving, and you can organize groups of people to show up and testify for or against bills. And you're playing that role of, hey, it should be somebody's job to be looking at each bill through the lens of how might this be helping or harming our boys, male youth, and men.
Mm. Regular people can and do make a difference. You are doing it. You are following these bills. You are creating, you are organizing. I have a group of friends right now who are very active in a group called Fight for Freelancers, monitoring laws affecting freelancers such as myself. Ordinary people who step up, who look at the legislation and who say, hey, have you thought about how this is affecting this group of people? Because I'm not seeing this here. If Blair can do it, if my friends can do it, you all can do it. You are passionate about the boys in your lives. We are going to absolutely include the links to the Washington Initiative for Boys and Men. And Blair, I know from previous conversations with you that you are very open to sharing what you've learned with others, that you would love to see more of these efforts going on nationwide and throughout the world, right?
Yes, it was neat. Yesterday, I got an email from someone in Alaska, a medical doctor, who said, I've been following your work for a while. By the way, I didn't know I had someone on my email list from Alaska, but that was cool to find out.
Love it.
At the end of his email, he said, maybe what we need is an Alaska initiative for boys and men.
Thank you so much for the passion that you pour into this. I don't know how you do all this and have the full-time job. I was kind of shocked when you shared that part, but really glad too, because it illustrates that this is something that regular people can do. I do this because I care so deeply about boys, because I couldn't not do it. Janet, that's why you're doing this. Blair, that's why you're doing this. We're not the only three. We are not the only three. Blair, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
While this episode is very informative about what's happening in Washington, it is a good example of what needs to happen and what could happen nationally and even internationally. We need to give more focus to what is happening for boys and men. We hope this has been inspiring. We hope this has encouraged you to think about how you can become an advocate for your boys and all boys. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thank you for being here. And as always, if you click through and just check out our sponsors, that's very helpful to us and very helpful to them. Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.